Hello, 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 everyone, and welcome to this month's Chill with B. This month, we're going to do something a little different. We're still going to keep it soft-spoken and sort of ASMR-ish. No big sounds unless Fury decides to be Fury because he's been yelling at me all day, so he might show up again. He likes to make cameos. But I'm going to keep it nice and soft, which, given what we're talking about, is going to seem like a really interesting contrast, I think. So what we're going to talk about today, and this is something that I've had requests for many, many times, I've made no secret of the fact that I'm a voracious reader. I studied English in university, and lately, as in like the last year and a bit, I have been absolutely obsessed with locked room, closed loop mysteries. My favorite book of all time, pretty much as long as I can remember, has been And Then There Were None by Agatha Christie, which is the quintessential locked room, closed loop mystery. So for anybody that doesn't know, a closed loop mystery is where the characters are stranded in an isolated setting. So they're, you know, on an island somewhere, or on a cruise ship, or stuck on a mountain, or, you know, anywhere that there's no contact with the outside world. So no cell phones, people can't get in and out. There's usually some sort of weather involved. Just that kind of thing that basically strands them together, which means a couple of things. One, they have to figure out who's doing whatever's happening so it doesn't happen to them. And two, the person that's doing it is one of them. So this is a really, it's almost like a claustrophobic feeling, but in a really thrilling way. I'm grossly claustrophobic, so I say that with a grain of salt. A locked room mystery is a mystery where the crime seems to be impossible. So think of, you know, the room was locked and somebody was murdered, but nobody could get in or out. And that person was the only one in there. So what the hell happened, right? That's the locked room portion. So it's impossible, but it happened. So usually to solve the mystery, they have to figure out not only the who, but the how. And again, really claustrophobic because it's this element of nothing is safe. You know, if somebody can be killed essentially like that in a locked room where they're supposed to be the only person there, then, you know, there's danger lurking around every corner. So it really ups the thrill level. So this is what I have been reading. I don't know why, but this has been what I have gravitated to for over a year now. These specifically, I used to read one of these every once in a while and then a different type. Fury just jumped on the chair and it was very loud. Sorry. It was a different type, you know, in between, and I would come back to these. And then the one day I went to the bookstore, and it was around my birthday last year. And I just picked up a whole bunch because people had given me gift cards and money for my birthday, and that's what I did. So I've just kind of been accumulating these for like a year, and there's a lot of them. I have a huge to be read list, but I also have a huge I have read that list just from the past, you know, 13, 14 months. So I have had requests to talk about some of the books that I really enjoy, do kind of a review, my opinion, that kind of thing. So I'm not going to do this the way a typical review would happen, where it's like, oh, this is the story and these are the characters and da da da. Excuse me. I'm going to read the back of the book and then I'm going to tell you what I liked about it, because I don't want this to be really in depth, because I don't want to feel like I'm in school again and doing novel analyses, because those were not the most fun things I've ever done. So. And I say this as an English major. So yeah, that's how we're going to do it. So the first book that we're going to talk about is called The Escape Room, and it's by Megan Golden. And the link will be in the post to the Goodreads entry on it, so you can take a look for yourselves. I'll read the back of the book, and it says, "Welcome to the escape room. Your goal is simple. Get out alive. In the lucrative world of finance, Vincent, Jules, Sylvie, and Sam are at the top of their game. They've mastered the art of the deal and celebrate their success in style. But a life of extreme luxury always comes at a cost. Invited to participate in an escape room challenge as a team-building exercise, the ferociously competitive co-workers crowd into the elevator of a high-rise building, eager to prove themselves. But when the lights go off and the doors stay shut, it quickly becomes clear that this is no ordinary competition. They're caught in a dangerous game of survival. Trapped in the dark, the colleagues must put aside their bitter rivalries and work together to solve cryptic clues to break free. But as the game begins to reveal the team's darkest secrets, they realize there's a price to be paid for the terrible deeds they've committed in their ruthless climb up the corporate ladder. As tempers fray and the clues turn deadly, they must solve one final chilling puzzle. Which one of them will kill in order to survive?" Yeah, that's about it. So the first thing that attracted me to this book was the setting, not the elevator, but the fact that all of the characters that are stuck in the elevator are from corporate finance. They're Wall Street tycoons kind of thing. And I spent a good chunk of my previous career in that world. So that was really interesting to me, because usually when a book is based in that sort of industry, it has the potential to be really boring. And I say that having been there for a long time. So I really liked the digging into the underside of that industry and that part of the world. Now, this is an American book. I'm in Canada and we do things very differently. So not exactly the way I knew things to happen here. But still a really good look at basically greed and narcissism at its finest, and what it can do to people. So the narrative structure of this book is another thing that I really liked. It alternates between a third person narrator in the elevator with the four people mentioned and a first person narrator named Sarah. So we go back and forth from the elevator to this sort of backstory. And in a situation where the characters in the elevator are important, but the situation they're in doesn't allow for a whole lot of fleshing them out. I mean, you get to see how they act in the extreme circumstances they're in, but it doesn't tell you why they're there. It doesn't tell you why they act the way they do, or, you know, what their character at its heart really is. Are they actually horrible people, or are they acting in response to their situation, like this kind of thing? So in a closed loop mystery, you don't always get a lot of that kind of character development, especially when you have a lot of characters. It's just, there's not time and most of it's not relevant. So integrating Sarah's story, and Sarah is someone who worked with these people, integrating her story into the mystery, so jumping back and forth, not only kept things moving at a really good pace, but it just sort of closed the gaps, right? So something would happen in the elevator, and then we'd talk to Sarah, and Sarah would provide little tidbits of, you know, her backstory and their backstory that would kind of make what just happened or what was about to happen more understandable, and you kind of see it from a different angle. I really love it when authors play with not only perspective, but a dual narrative approach. Sorry, everything I learned in university just went out my ear. I can't. Anyway, I really enjoy it when they change it up that way. In a story like this, one of the things I like about these genres is that they do move quickly. But a lot of the time, like I said, it's at the expense of character development and getting to really know the people that you're watching unfold in front of you, right? I actually read a book not too long ago. It was one of the first ones I read when I started this obsession. And I honestly could not stand any of the protagonists, none of them. like none of them. It was a take on And Then There Were None. It was a bunch of people locked on an island. And I believe I asked about it in the Discord server. I was like, what do you do if you hate the characters? Do you finish the book? And I was a good 3/4 of the way through the book before I started to not warm up to the characters, because let's face it, none of them were likable. But I started to understand them. And usually in this type of novel, somebody is likable, usually the narrator. The narrator in that book was terrible. Like, she was a horrible person. So when I got into this one, I wasn't expecting to like any of the people in the elevator, because the other thing too is authors are not going to have horrible things happen to people that the audience really likes, right? So the people in the elevator, I'll be honest, are horrible, horrible people. Sarah, on the other hand, is not. And you kind of get this humanized version of the story through her eyes. You get to see them, these awful people, from the perspective of somebody who's the complete opposite. And it's really interesting how it changes your sympathies for what's happening in the elevator. There were moments where I was like, yeah, you guys can stay in there. You know, it's that kind of thing. So the author here just wove an unbelievable story. And it kept me so gripped. Like, I finished this one in less than 24 hours, which I'm pretty quick, but usually, you know, I have a life and I go do other things. This one, not so much. I finished it, if not in one sitting, it was something like two. Like, it didn't take much because I was right into it. So I recommend this one for anybody that's looking for a mystery with a human story in the middle of it. Like, just a really nice combination of genres there. And it turned out, like, the climax of the book was really good. So I don't want to give too much away, though, because that seems counterproductive. But anyway, moving on to our second book. This one is probably tied with The Escape Room for my favorite that I've read in the last year. It's called Shiver by Allie Reynolds. I based an audio on an idea I got from this book. So the audio is I Chose Your Key. And I'll kind of let you look that up and decide where that came from. But I'll read the back of the book and then we'll talk about it. So this is Shiver by Allie Reynolds. It says, a reunion weekend in the French Alps turns deadly for 5 friends when their secrets resurface in this spine-tingling locked room thriller. When Mila accepts an off-season invitation to Le Rocher, one of France's most exclusive ski resorts, she's expecting a weekend of catching up with 4 old friends. Though she hasn't seen them in a decade, she's never forgotten the bond they forged on this very mountain during a winter spent fiercely training for an elite snowboarding competition. Yet the moment Mila and the others arrive for the reunion, they can tell something is wrong. Inside the deserted ski lodge, an icebreaker game awaits, designed to draw out their secrets and to remind them of Saskia, the enigmatic 6th member of their group, who vanished the morning of the competition years before and has long been presumed dead. Stranded in the lodge with a looming snowstorm, making escape impossible. I don't read for a living, it's fine. Mila realizes there's no one on the mountain she can trust, because someone will stop at nothing to find out the truth about Saskia. And if Mila's not careful, she could be the next to disappear. Doesn't that sound amazing? Yeah. Yeah, it does. It did to me. I was very excited to dig into this one. There's a couple things that jumped out at me on this. Now, it's your typical mystery, locked room, closed loop mystery. Stuck in a ski lodge, the snow is keeping them stranded, no cell service, blah, blah, blah. What I loved, there were two things. One, snowboarding kind of became another character. So you've got your main characters and you've got, you know, the story that's unfolding, but it really went into the competitive snowboarding world in such a way that it felt like a character unto itself. And as somebody who has no experience in that whatsoever, has never even thought about it as something that would be interesting, I found it fascinating, because the author clearly knows her stuff about that world. And I believe she's an athlete, if I remember reading that correctly. But it created an atmosphere for the characters that had this like lingering feeling to it. Everything they do, every move they make, every decision they make, all comes back to this world of elite snowboarding. So it really did feel like its own character. And I really love that. Anytime an author makes a setting or something that's typically inanimate in some way, a character, that catches my attention instantly. If they do it well. If they don't, I'm like, what are you trying to do? This is awful. But this was not that case. This was really well done. The other thing I loved about this book that really grabbed me was something I wasn't expecting. In the blurb I just read you, it doesn't say anything about there being a romance in here, but there is one, and damn, is it good. We know I get up in my feels. We know I like to live there. I like to put you guys there as well. And anytime I find these little nuggets of subgenres inside of a book like this, I get really excited if it's handled well. I'll be honest, when I finished Shiver, I couldn't start another book for about 3 days. Normally, I finish a book and I go right into the next one, sometimes in the same sitting, depending on how much time I have. And this one, it like clung to me. I carried that story around in my head for like 3 days. And not the mystery part, the romance, the love story in the middle of it, which... That's where the idea for the audio came from that I mentioned. And it was just so good. When you're dealing with this type of mystery, the whole point is to keep things moving at a fast pace, right? You want them to move. You want them to be interesting, to grab your attention, to make you want to keep turning pages to find out what happens next. When I was reading the parts that were just about the mystery, the situation they were in, that's how I read. I was literally flipping pages like crazy. Like it was a little sick how fast I went. When it came to the love story in the middle, after my initial shock, because I wasn't expecting it, I found any time that was the focus of the narrative, I slowed down. It's like I was savoring it. You know, it's like you get a really luscious piece of chocolate and you put it on your tongue and you just let it melt for a few minutes so that you can be completely encapsulated by the flavor, right? That's how I read those portions of this book, because the character development and making us care about the characters, making us really understand where they're coming from, is a particular talent that this author clearly has. I, at certain points, I was like, oh yeah, we're in the middle of a mystery. I don't even know what I was thinking, because this other piece is so just overwhelming, but in a good way. So I found that when it came down to the nitty gritty, namely the climax of the piece, the author did a really, really tight job of knitting the two pieces together. So sometimes when you get into that, you know, everything's coming to a head and people are losing their minds and you don't know what the hell's going on. If there's a subplot or another genre mixed in, I had a university professor that used to complain about this, you can lose a lot of that secondary piece. And it becomes something that was almost a device to flesh out the story where it was weak, right? That was not the case here. The way it was tied together at the end, where the romance part became part of the mystery part and it was all tied together in the climax, really made you feel like those two independent components of the story fit. That is not an easy thing to do when you have two distinct genres, subgenres going on inside one book. So Allie Reynolds did that very, very well. And I highly, highly recommend this book. The twist at the end was good too. So usually these types of books have a twist of some sort that sometimes you see coming and sometimes you're completely gobsmacked. It depends on where you're at. That one I kind of saw coming in a way, but the way it played out, I wouldn't have guessed that in a million years. There were certain things that were like, yeah, that's kind of not obvious, but kind of saw that coming, especially if you're familiar with the genre, you start to pick up the clues of what's happening. But the way it actually played out, it was like, oh, all right, that was a way to go. And it was a really good way to go and did not expect it. So really highly recommended. All right, next. This one is the most recent one that I finished. I was not going to include it. I had a completely different list. And then I finished it and went, yeah, we need to have this book. So it's one that I picked up in a bookstore. I was with a friend and they were looking for a specific book. And I was just kind of browsing. And this one was on the shelf. And I saw the cover and I went, And the reason, there's a great big iceberg on the cover. And in my previous life, we used to use something called the iceberg slide. So talking about the analysis of the financial world, the things that we did, the iceberg was a really good symbol for what we did because you only saw a small portion of it above the water. The rest of it, the stuff that we really dug into in the nitty-gritty, was below the surface and was usually several times bigger than the part that you see. That image on the front of the book made me want to read it, not only because of the setting, but because I knew it was going to have something to do with the story. So there's what you see on the surface, and then there's this whole other level of stuff going on underneath that you really have no idea until it's right on you. It grabbed my attention really quickly. The book, I realize I haven't said the book's name, is called Midnight by Amy McCullough. I'll read the back of the book. It says, In the frigid summers of the Antarctic continent, the sun never sets, and Olivia Campbell has long dreamed of spending a sunlit night in this beautiful remote place. So when her boyfriend, a high-powered art dealer with a taste for the finer things in life, decides to stage an ostentatious, career-making auction aboard a luxury cruise liner to Antarctica, Olivia can hardly believe her luck. That is, until the first bodies are discovered. It seems like a terrible accident. This is the Drake Passage, after all, one of the most notorious bodies of water on the planet, and there are always risks in such extreme conditions. But as the situation deteriorates, it soon becomes clear that there is real danger on board, and that the closest help is hundreds of miles away. With tensions rising and temperatures plummeting, Olivia wonders whether she's booked a fabulous adventure or a one-way ticket to her own destruction. First of all, whoever wrote that blurb needs a raise, because it was really like, I read it and if the cover hadn't sold me, that would have. Sorry, I needed water. I mentioned this in when I talked about Shiver, where snowboarding became a character. In this one, the setting, so the Antarctica, jeez, this is going well, y'all. Antarctica and particularly the Drake Passage became characters unto themselves. The descriptions of where they were, the scenery, they were all so vivid. I felt like I was there, to the point where I actually went on YouTube and looked up videos of Drake Passage to see what it actually was. Because I've heard of it, but I wasn't, like, it's, again, like snowboarding, not something I ever thought would be interesting. But it made me want to know more about where they were because of the things that were described as the story was unfolding. The main character is not bland, that's the wrong word, because that's a negative word. She's very average. So she could be anybody. But what I liked about her is there was a very humanizing part of her story that happened before the cruise that she kind of gets into more as events unfold. And it basically pointed to the heart of being a human being, of dealing with day-to-day stresses of, you know, trying to maneuver when you feel like the world is on your shoulders. And again, she's in finance. I think she's an actuary or studying to be an actuary, which is similar to the world that I was in. So again, found that really interesting. Didn't know that when I picked up the book, but it was a nice little surprise. A lot of the events that led to the suspense and the tension and that kind of thing happened off, if it was a movie, it'd be off screen, but it was prior to what was happening in the book itself. The twist at the end, there were a couple of them that one I saw coming, the other one I didn't, which I love. I love it when they surprise me. I really do, because, you know, when you read enough of these things, like I said, you kind of start to see the patterns and figure it out. And I loved how it came up, the second twist, that I was like, oh my God, like, did not expect that. Because it goes back to an unreliable narrator. She's telling us, because it's first person, so it's Olivia's, it's not first person, it's third person from Olivia's perspective. So she is the focus of the narrative. And everything is told the way she knows things, the way she understands things. So it's not your omnipotent narrator that is filling in gaps that the main characters don't know. It's a narrator that is very much focused on the one character and her view of events. It's the closest thing you can be to first person without being first person. And so there were a lot of things that Olivia assumed to be true, assumed to be fact, that as you get into the story, you start to question. And she starts to question, which I love. I love an unreliable narrator because it sets up a twist so well. Because you start to believe that what she sees and hears and tells you, or what the narrator tells you about her or about the situation around her, is true, right? So when it comes out that you're not the only one being surprised, it's kind of a bonding moment with the character, because you're like, oh, girl, I knew, like, I was with you on that. Like, I thought the same thing you did, but that's what you're expected to do. It's her story. And then when things twist and the character's like, what the hell? And you're like, what the hell? And it all moves in a different direction. You start to realize just how fallible this type of narrative can be. And it sets up really suspenseful moments because the character has no idea what's about to happen, which means you as the reader don't either. Sometimes in a first person, when they're telling the story from later on and they're just going back and retelling, it's not as effective because they know what's coming and you can kind of tell they're setting it up. But the unreliable narrator here, where the character has no idea what the hell's happening, and her view of events is what she believes, or she believes events to be what she knows, it allows the reader to be closer to the characters. So I really like that aspect of it. So this one, I think it was 2 days it took me to read this one. Really, really well written, very tight narrative. The setting, like the way the author describes the setting itself, is worth the read. And I looked up the Drake Passage. So she talks about at one point, it's either the Drake Lake, where it's completely smooth as glass, there's no waves, there's no ripples, there's no anything, or the Drake Shake, where the waves are so bad, you know, you're afraid the ship's going over. So it's kind of using the weather, using the condition of the water to further the story and to place doubt in the character's mind, because how much of what she's experiencing is because of the situation with the boat and the weather and the water and whatever, and how much is actually happening and would happen even if they weren't in that particular setting. You know what I mean? So really, really highly recommend that one as well. Okay, next. I don't want to make this too long, though, because nobody wants to listen to like an hour-long book review. But the next one is by Ruth Ware, who is one of my favorite authors. I think I've read almost everything she's written. This is her newest one. It's called One Perfect Couple. I read it the day it came out in one sitting. Ruth Ware, for anybody that doesn't know, has been called the Agatha Christie of our generation. So she writes in a more modern way, but with the same style as Agatha Christie. This one is, it's again, you know, stuck on an island. I'll read the blurb, but stuck on an island, you start to see who your friends are kind of thing, which is pretty typical in this type of mystery. But here we go. It says, Lila is in a bit of a rut. Her postdoctorate research has fizzled out. She's pretty sure her contract won't be extended, and things with her boyfriend, Nico, an aspiring actor, God, aren't going great. When the opportunity arises for Nico to join the cast of a new reality TV show, One Perfect Couple, she decides to try out with him. This is the big break she needs. A whirlwind pre-production process later, Lila finds herself whisked off to a tropical paradise with Nico, boating through the Indian Ocean toward Ever After Island, where the two of them will compete against four other couples: Bayer and Angel, Dan and Santana, Joel and Romy, and Connor and Xana, in order to win a cash prize. But not long after they arrive on the deserted island, things start to go wrong. After the first challenge leaves everyone rattled and angry, an overnight storm takes matters from bad to worse. Cut off from the mainland by miles of ocean, deprived of their phones, and unable to reach the boat and crew that brought them there, the group must band together for survival. Tensions run high and fresh water runs low. When contestants start to die, Lila realizes she and Nico are trapped on the island with a murderer on the loose and nowhere to hide. Yep, that pretty much sums it up. This one, okay. One of my most hated books in school was Lord of the Flies. Second only to some of James Joyce's stuff that I had to read in university. Not a fan. Lord of the Flies, I read, I don't even remember when. It was in high school at some point. And it was horrible. Like, it was like traumatizing, horrible. When we started to get into the action of this one, part of me was like, oh God, we're going down the same road. So for anybody that doesn't know, Lord of the Flies is about a group of kids that are basically marooned somewhere and they have to figure out how to survive. And as you can imagine, things go sideways really quickly. So when things like water and food start to become an issue and there's no safe shelter and there's no first aid and, you know, that kind of thing, you really start to see humanity at its finest pretty quickly. And that's kind of what started to happen in this book, but not in a way that was disturbing. Like, I think Lord of the Flies was so disturbing because it was children. This is grown adults and they have a little bit more on the ball than kids would, and they don't go savage quite the way kids do or did in that book. This one really looked at the relationships between the individuals. One of the key components to this type of mystery is there's usually a backstory that connects people that they have no idea about. So you get a group of what seems like random people in a place, and all of a sudden you start getting little details, little nuggets of information that in passing seem like nothing. But as the story progresses and as you come to the climax of the piece, you start to realize that, hey, this is actually important. So you should have remembered that thing from, you know, five chapters ago, whatever. And then you realize how everybody's connected. This one, there was one thing I didn't like about this book. And it wasn't just the campy mention of one of her other books. They started ripping pages out of a book for a fire, and she named one of her own titles as the book they were ripping apart. That was kind of cringe, not gonna lie. But the thing that I wasn't really a fan of was the way it all wrapped up. The story was kind of an afterthought, like the ties and the connections and the things that usually come to ahead in the climax of the piece, right around that big reveal aha moment, they were more addressed in the denouement than they were in the climax. So, you know, as the story is winding down, as you're sort of coming down from that high intensity, it's like they were telling, not showing, or they were showing, No, they were telling, not showing. That was right. Because in writing, you want to show, not tell. So you don't want a big section of exposition where people are like explaining shit to you. You want to see the characters in the action. The narrator, it's a first-person narrative from Lila's perspective. And she just started like filling in the gaps after it was all said and done. And I was like, what the hell? Not a deal breaker, still a really good story. A really good look at what that type of situation can do to you. Not so much a mystery per se, not the way they typically are, but really suspenseful nonetheless. And there were some really, you know, absolute nail-biting moments, but it was kind of a letdown a little bit that the after, like the end was sort of all sort of crammed in there. Like, oh, by the way, you need to know da 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 da. That part could have been handled differently, I think, but the book was still really, really good. And I would recommend reading it. I would just not be expecting a massive reveal during the climax of the piece, because it's not going to happen. So I'll say no more about that because I don't want to spoil it. Okay, last one. Probably not the last one. There's another one here, but it depends on time. This one is The Fury by Alex. I can't pronounce this. I think it's Michaelides, Michaelides. This one, I'll read the back and then get into it. It says, this is a tale of murder. Or maybe that's not quite true. At its heart, it's a love story, isn't it? Lana Farrar is a reclusive ex-movie star and one of the most famous women in the world. Every year, she invites her close friends to escape the English weather and spend Easter on her idyllic private Greek island. I tell you this because you may think you know this story. You probably read about it at the time. It caused a real stir in the tabloids, if you remember. It had all the necessary ingredients for a press sensation. A celebrity, a private island cut off by the wind, and a murder. We found ourselves trapped there overnight. Our old friendships concealed hatred and a desire for revenge. What followed was a game of cat and mouse, a battle of wits full of twists and turns building to an unforgettable climax. The night ended in violence and death. But who am I? My name is Elliot Chase, and I'm going to tell you a story unlike any you've ever heard. Okay. So, this is a really good one for anybody that's read, what's it called? I think it's Everyone in My Family Has Killed Someone is the book I'm thinking of. And the reason I say that is because the narrator is very similar. So, in this book, the narrator is talking to us as though they are sitting in front of us telling us a story. They address the reader directly. This is a key element, and it, how do I say this? I mentioned before unreliable narrators when I talked about Midnight. This one is the epitome of an unreliable narrator. In fact, there are parts of this book that read like a frickin' fever dream. And this person is telling us this as though it's all happened or is happening. But as you get deeper into the story, the cracks start to show. And you start to see that what they're telling you is not reality at all, or not the way it actually was. It's their reality, which, sure. But it's not reliable in any way. So you start out thinking you're reading, you know, a basic mystery about somebody killed on a private island, pretty typical in this genre. And as it progresses, you start to get a really deep look at the people involved, the relationships between them, and the backstory behind it. And that shifts everything because it's not really a mystery at the heart of the thing once you start to hear how it all unfolded. So there's a lot of twists in this one that I don't know if you call them twists for twist's sake or if it's just because of the way the narrator views life and views the situation. Not the quickest one that I read. It took me a few days to get through this one. It was interesting, but it wasn't nonstop action. I just really enjoyed the different narrative style and how by the end of it, I was like, dude, what did I just read? Like, it was out there in a really good way, but not what I was expecting. So if you like that type of type of story where everything just changes and everything you thought was true ends up being completely different, this is a good book for you. And if you like that sort of cheeky narrator style where they're talking to you like they're sharing secrets, it's really well done. So, recommend. Last one. Okay, so this one is, it's a teen novel, I'll be honest. It was recommended by a friend that I trust. I trust their opinion quite a bit. And even though it's a teen young adult book, it doesn't read like one. It's about teens, but it doesn't read like something meant for teenagers. So it's called All Your Twisted Secrets by Diana Urban. And it says, what do the queen bee, star athlete, valedictorian, stoner, loner, and music geek all have in common? They were all invited to a scholarship dinner only to discover it's a trap. Someone has locked them into a room with a bomb, a syringe filled with poison, and a note saying they have an hour to pick someone to kill or else everyone dies. Amber Prescott is determined to get her classmates and herself out of the room alive, but that might be easier said than done. No one knows how they're all connected or who would want them dead. As they retrace the events over the past year that might have triggered their captor's ultimatum, it becomes clear that everyone is hiding something. And with the clock ticking down, confusion turns into fear, and fear morphs into panic as they race to answer the biggest question: who will they choose to die? And it says right on the back, it says, The Breakfast Club meets Karen McManus's One of Us is Lying in Urban's adrenaline-fueled thriller. And that's pretty apt. So obviously the different character tropes that you're dealing with brings about The Breakfast Club. That's a pretty common thing in pop culture of any form now. This is another one where the narrative jumps back and forth. So it's kind of like the escape room where one chapter you were in the elevator and the next you were talking to Sarah. This one chapter you're in the room and the next one you're hearing from Amber about the histories between the characters. So it kind of starts at a point and then leads up to what's happening in the room at the climax of the book. It was a quick read, not going to lie. Because it was written for teens, it wasn't all that complicated. It went really quickly, but it was also exceptionally fast-paced. So this is another case of what's being presented to you at the beginning and as you go isn't necessarily what's real. The twist at the end of this one was what caught my attention. And again, spoilers, I'm not going to go into it, but it was something that I kind of had it was one of those throwaway, oh, I bet it's this, ha ha ha, no, it would never be. And then it was. So I kind of sat there and went, oh, did that just happen? But it wasn't bad. I loved the character development. When we deal with teenage characters, a lot of the time we don't get a fully fleshed out character arc for any of them. We don't get to see who they really are, especially in an ensemble book like this, where, you know, there's seven characters that you're supposed to care about. This one did a really good job in a short amount of time of making you care about the characters, really seeing how they fit together, what made them tick, and kind of coming to the end of it and going, wow, this literally changed their entire lives. So this is a good one for anybody that wants just a quick throwaway read that is entertaining and, you know, really fast-paced, but also with a tightly written story and a narrative structure that just keeps you interested. So All Your Twisted Secrets, another one that I recommend. And I think that's it. That's all I had on my list. So I'm going to wrap it up here. Thank you so much for listening, everybody. I hope this was entertaining. And if you do decide to check out any of these books, let me know what you thought, because I'm interested. I want to know if you thought similarly, or if you had a different opinion on them, or whatever the case may be. So that's it for me for this month, and I will see you all next month. Take care, guys.